The State Legislative Redistricting Subcommittee will come to order. DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Byrd.
Here.
Vice Chair Robinson.
Here.
Ranking Member Daly.
Here.
Representative Arrington.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Garrison.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Hawkins.
Here.
Manning.
Here.
McLean. McLean.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Persons Maleka.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Pant.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
Woodson. Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Members, a few reminders before we begin. Please silence all electronic devices. To the members of the public, if you wish to comment, please fill out a form and submit it to the sergeant staff. And also, members and presenters and members of the public, please ensure that your microphone is on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. Members, welcome back to week three. So far in our committee process, we have benefited from a redistricting primer, a legislator university course on how to use the map drawing application, and a more advanced training on the map drawing tools available to help us analyze maps in alignment with our constitutional standards. Today, we will take the next step in our efforts by reviewing the concepts we've been learning about and applying them while looking at the currently enacted House map. Our goal is to view more tangible examples to concepts we've been discussing, such as compactness and using county boundaries. Seeing how these concepts can potentially interact with one another will help us understand some of the future decision points we may encounter as we deliberate maps, and will also enable us to apply a consistent methodology for our maps as we continue to move through our process. During the last redistricting cycle, the Florida Supreme Court supported the House's ability to consistently apply methodology for drawing districts across the entire state. From the court's own words, quote, "The majority decision today reflects that while a variety of different rationales and concepts may be available for application in redistricting, the rationales or concepts actually used must be applied consistently. Applying a particular rationale is one part of Florida, but a completely different rationale in another part of the state creates legitimate constitutional questions as to the boundaries drawn and the justifications for those boundaries as asserted by the drafters." I'd also like to take the opportunity to point out that the same concepts we'll review today can additionally be used when members are viewing the publicly submitted maps on our website. These same concepts will help to provide a framework through which you can review a map or even help find trends that may appear throughout public submissions. Now, as we move through today's presentation, there's something I'd like for you to keep in the back of your mind, and it's actually something we touched on during last week's meeting and is important and warrants repeating. There is no single correct map. There is no such thing as the best map. Even as we see within the tiers of our standards, decisions must be weighed among one another with the goal of drawing a legally compliant map. And as I think we will come to appreciate even more today, Florida is a unique shape and has unique geography. We have an abundance of waterways and coastlines across the state. Counties do not always have smooth boundary lines, as well as cities that have unique boundary lines. As we work to create new district boundary lines, all of these considerations will come into play. Now I'd like to turn it over to Lita to present on the current Florida House map.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And DJ, if you could assist me with the PowerPoint, thank you. So members, also as well as that you have placed in front of you is just a printout of the current House map. We know sometimes the TVs are a little hard to see, so we wanted you to have something a little easier to reference. As the chair mentioned, today we're going to walk through some more tangible examples that take place surrounding our constitutional standards and the existing House map. Again, just to reiterate, we are walking through the existing, currently enacted House map that was passed in 2012. Just don't want there to be any confusion on that point. Moving on to the next slide. Again, you've seen this slide, and we'll probably continue to see it several times throughout the course of this process. It outlines our constitutional standards through which we are, you know, required to produce and approve maps. Real quickly, I'll run through the tiers just to make sure everyone has a refresher. Our Tier 1 standards prohibit favoring or disfavoring any political party or incumbent, along with protecting racial and language minority groups' ability to elect candidates of their choice and using similar language to that of what is in the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Tier 1 also says that districts shall be contiguous territory. Moving on to Tier 2, Tier 2 states that our district shall be nearly as equal in population as practicable, be compact, and shall follow existing political and geographical boundaries where feasible. As I'm sure you are aware, Tier 1 takes precedent over Tier 2. However, when you're moving and evaluating the standards amongst the tiers, they are considered co-equals. Moving on to our next slide. So these are some statistics we haven't covered yet in any of our committee meetings, and they will be concepts that we cover throughout the rest of the presentation. So I want to take a second to stop and look at those. Here are some of the statistics that surround the 2012 House map and different ways of analyzing, again, the standards by which we are required to draw. The first one here, luckily for us, back in 2012 and still today, Florida has 67 counties. The number of counties that were kept whole in the 2012 House map is 37. There were 30 county splits that occurred in the House map. There were 410 cities back in the 2012 House map. Later today, we'll find out that this decade there are 412. The number of cities that were kept whole is 335. The number of cities splits was 75. And the overall map deviation was 4%. And that's another one where we'll dive into and make sure that the committee understands how that deviation is calculated. Our overall compactness scores, which we kind of dug into and explored last time, for the overall state house map, our REOC score was 0.43. Convex hole was 0.8, and our Paulsby-Popper score was also 0.43. This slide will serve as a good point of reference kind of as we go through the different buckets of today's presentation, so feel free to reference it if you need. The first item that I'd like to get into and talk about is related to population, and two of the standards really kind of focus on this concept of ideal population and even how you can use existing geographical and political boundaries to help achieve the deviations and ideal population that we're looking for. So again, in the 2012 House map, the ideal population was 156,678 people. Obviously, with Florida having grown this decade, our ideal population is larger. But the next couple slides that we're going to go through, that 156,678 number will be a good point of reference for you. So let's talk about ideal population and deviation. State legislative districts are typically allowed a larger deviation percentage than congressional districts. The courts have generally said that 10% deviation is acceptable. Now, there are some court rulings out there that give some leeway on that threshold, both above 10% and below 10%. But historically, Florida has always been well within that threshold. And again, last decade's map was right at 4% for our state house map. So you may be asking, how do we calculate ideal population? It's very simple. You can see in this graph here, we have a row that indicates Florida's total population, both from 2010 and 2020, and it's a simple, simple basic math function. You take your total population, divide it by the number of districts you're aiming for, and that equates to your ideal, in this case, house district population. So again, you can see we were right over 156,000 for 2010. In 2020, we'll be closer to 179,000. While we're talking about ideal population and deviation, just for your point of reference, the congressional districts that will be drawn have a much stricter population threshold. It's generally accepted that it generally required that they are plus or minus one person. However, there are, again, court rulings out there that have allowed deviations in very specific circumstances as it relates to the congressional map. So I just wanted to provide that context for you as well. It should also be noted that I think for the Florida House map, I do not believe that we've ever gone above the 4% deviation. And with regards to the congressional map, we've always been within that plus or minus one person as well. So now that we've talked about population, let's talk about the concept of keeping counties whole. So based on the graphic that was shown a couple pages back, there are 38 counties within the state of Florida that were too small to fit within a single house district or be a district by itself. These counties had to be combined with other whole counties or parts of counties to create an entire district. And just for your point of reference, the graphic that I'm referencing is on slide 6. So if we move on, we'll show two good examples in the current house map that illustrate this principle. The first one here shown on the left is current House District 22. You can see, as indicated by the blue lines, those are our county boundaries. The left kind of portion of the district you can see is comprised of the entirety of Levy County. Now, Levy County wasn't quite big enough to constitute an entire house district, so it goes outside and kind of to the southeast portion of that district, reaches over into Marion County to grab the remaining population that was needed to create an entire house district. The district on the right is House District 76, and this is actually comprised entirely of Charlotte County. Now, we'll come back to this in a little bit because this was a unique circumstance that occurred last decade, but the population of Charlotte County was within an acceptable threshold to actually be an entire district in and of itself, and it is the only district in the current House map that is made up of just one county. So we talked about keeping counties whole. Let's kind of talk about the flip side of the coin, which is keeping districts wholly within a county. So these are the areas of which in the 2010 census, 2012 House map, there were 29 counties that were too large to meet ideal population thresholds and therefore had to go and reach outside of counties. We can actually go to the next slide. Thanks, DJ. So for this example, I'd like to look at Lee County. Lee County's population was 618,754. So when you do the simple math, you can realize that there are approximately four house districts that fit within the sheer population of Lee County. And so this is a really good example for this one. You can see that it is comprised here of the green district on the side, the red district, the Orne district in the northeast corner, as well as the district here that kind of appears as a light purple color. So given the overall population of Lee County, we were able to fit four entire house districts within that county very succinctly. So now let's talk about overall deviation. And this deviation can be applied whether it's to a specific district or to the overall house map, which is the example we're going to walk through. Now, Charlotte County, the brown county that appears here on the top, and Lee County, the green county on the bottom, we've kind of already touched on. But in the 2012 house map, both of these had very unique situations that allowed Florida to dictate the upper and lower bounds of our deviation for our statewide map. So you can see here, Charlotte County on the top had a population of 159,978 people. This is 3,300 people over the ideal population of a house district. Or if you convert that to percentages, it's plus 2.1% deviation. Moving on to Lee County, and DJ, I'll have you go to the next slide, please. Lee County's population, as we just touched on, was 618,754 people, which did allow for four districts within that county. As the team back a decade ago was drawing this map, their goal of keeping Cape Coral whole within Lee County allowed them to produce a district 77, which I apologize, that is a typo on the slide. It should say 77. District 77 was formed with a population of 173,745 people. This district was 2,933 people under the ideal population of the state house districts, or converted into percentages, negative 1.9% deviation. So with that being said, on the next slide, you can see here that with Charlotte County encompassing 0.2.1% of a, we'll call it a high watermark district, Lee County, District 76 within Lee County comprised the low watermark district of negative 1.9%. If you take those two benchmarks and subtract them from one another, you get an overall deviation of 4%. And that is where I referenced earlier, the current state house map has an overall deviation of 4%. So those results, obviously, for this decade, our population has shifted and grown. Those may not be the exact examples or situations that we are evaluating this decade, but the concept of calculating overall deviation, that will be a similar process, and the math behind it will be similar. This slide, just to kind of be able to draw a contrast to the slide we saw previously, this is a map based on the 2020 census geography, so our current population. And as we mentioned, our current ideal population for a house district will be 179,485 people. The counties indicated in the green, of which there are 29 of them, are counties that are over ideal population. And the counties indicated in the orange of which there are 38 of them are under our ideal population for this decade. What's interesting is even though they are different counties, we actually have the same exact number of over under population counties as last decade. Thought that was a fun fact. So moving on, we're now going to move on and talk about Florida's municipalities. And a lot of the concepts we're going to talk about here also apply to that similar tier two standard of where feasible being able to use existing political and geographical boundaries. So based on our 2010 population, and I'm sorry, based on our 2020 population, Florida now has 412 incorporated municipalities. And I actually want to pause for a second. This image here on the right, I know it may be a little difficult to see. DJ, if you don't mind just kind of slowly clicking through the next handful of slides. What we have here is we've gone in and all of the formerly incorporated municipalities across the state, we've highlighted them in the color purple. And what I think is just truly fascinating, when you look at how large our state is, there's a large chunk of territory that is either unincorporated territory, perhaps it's the Everglades, perhaps it's farmland, but it is not formally confined within a defined legal municipality boundary. And I think just given the size of Florida as a state, I found this very interesting whenever we put it together graphically. And DJ, if you'd like to move on to slide 20, please. So again, just to show, these are our current municipality populations that are over our ideal population for this decade. These are all, you know, generally speaking, the larger cities across Florida. I don't think anything on this map will surprise anyone. One fun fact is that Cape Coral this decade has made our top 10 list. Last decade, it was actually number 11 in terms of population. And so, you know, earlier we illustrated that when the drawers were creating House District 76, they had a goal of keeping Cape Coral whole. However, now it is at clocking in at 194,000 people, too large to be kept whole within a House district. So I think that just really is a good point to illustrate how large Florida has grown over the last decade. So continuing to talk about municipalities, one of the considerations that the Florida Supreme Court has outlined is whenever you're considering political boundaries, they're generally accepted as county boundaries and also these city and municipality boundaries. What's interesting whenever you start to dive into this is that a lot of Florida's municipalities have some very unique boundary lines. And so as we go through the map drawing process, should the decision point come before us of whether or not we'd like to keep a city whole or perhaps a county whole, we wanted to point out some of the things that should, you know, be considered for keeping cities whole, particular in this instance. So the example that's on the slide here is actually down in Southeast Florida, and it's how three municipalities have very intertwined district boundaries, or excuse me, municipal boundaries. The blue district shown here is the city of Davie. The red is Southwest Ranches, and the green is Pembroke Pines. And you can see with the geography that's shown here on the screen, there's some sections of the Southwest Ranches community that are actually inside of the Pembroke Pines boundary, and likewise with Davie. And so I think it goes to show as we look at Florida's cities across the entire state, we'll see a lot of intertwining geography and also geography that has holes in it. So you can see there's territory between Davie in the blue and Pembroke Pines in the green, where it is just unincorporated area. However, it's fully encompassed by two municipalities. The next slide here, I think this is another fun Florida fact. There are actually four incorporated municipalities in the state of Florida that cross county boundaries. So again, as we go to weigh decision points about whether to split cities or to split counties, there's actually some that could come into direct contradiction with each other. So the first one here is Longboat Key, which actually crosses the county boundaries of Sarasota and Manatee counties. Marineland, which is one of Florida's smallest cities, is between the St. John's and Flagler County boundaries. Flagler Beach falls between Flagler and Volusia counties, and Fanning Springs is over on the west coast between Levy and Gilchrist counties. The county lines here, just for your point of reference, are indicated by those blue lines. This next example is just to additionally illustrate some very unique municipal boundaries that exist within the state. Again, we talked about with the Southeast Florida example, some areas where they're intertwined or perhaps have holes. If you look really closely, because it is kind of hard to see, on the northern part of New Smyrna Beach, there's actually some completely discontiguous territory that is part of the formal municipality boundary. There's some little specks of red up there. And likewise, down in the southern city of Edgewater, there's a lot of areas that are connected just by, thin territory, and also there's some unincorporated area between both of those two cities. This next example is of Northport, which resides in Sarasota County. This one is interesting because the city of Northport actually is completely discontiguous, and it's split by the Myaka River. So again, as we go to consider, what is a geographical boundary, such as a waterway like the Myaka River, or keeping city boundaries whole, which would be the city of Northport in the green, those are two instances that occur in the same tier of our constitutional standards that we'll have to weigh should that come before us. So now let's talk about keeping cities whole. We've talked about keeping counties whole. Now let's talk about keeping cities whole. This is an image here in the panhandle of Florida. As you can see, between districts 3 and district 4, a lot of the boundaries follow whether it's I-10 or perhaps some municipal boundaries. However, there's this little bump in district 4 that I believe we got questions about last decade. And DJ, if you could go to the next slide, we'll actually zoom in so we can see it clearer. This territory was added into District 3 to allow the city of Crestview to be kept whole as part of that district. Now, what's interesting, if you are able to, well, I know you can't, but members, if you're able to look at your presentation, the very northern city boundaries of Crestview, as they appear on this map with this decade's geography, actually are now outside of current House District 3. And I think that's a really good example of how municipalities can and oftentimes do change their boundaries throughout the decade, as well as the Census Bureau works with the local entities to make sure that their census block geography aligns to the best possible of the local municipal geography. So again, this is a good example of an attempt to keep a city whole and then additionally use surrounding waterways to finish off that boundary. Let's talk about roadways. So this is a really great example. As we demonstrated in the program during our last committee meeting, these really bold red lines can be turned on within our map drawing application, and they indicate primary and secondary roads. This is an image of House District 91 in Southeast Florida that does use a lot of primary and secondary roads to create their boundaries, whether it's the north-south boundaries or even the east-west boundaries, and only does it deviate to account for some of the other districts that are surrounding it. This next example is of using railroads or railways to be able to define boundaries. So this is a series of districts found in Pinellas County. We're looking here, obviously, within the red box. And DJ, if you actually go to the next slide, it'll zoom in. Kind of the center connecting point between these four districts is actually a local railway in Pinellas County. Railroads are another acceptable geographical feature that the Supreme Court identified that are also, quite frankly, good for drawing lines. They create nice, clean, crisp lines. And so where it was able to be done, it was used here in Pinellas County to differentiate the boundaries between these four districts. Let's move on to waterways. So the image on the screen here is of Northeast Florida, and the St. John's River is a prominent river in Northeast Florida. DJ, if you go to the next slide, it will zoom in. So as you can see here, the districts that reside in Duval County, as well as two of the districts in Clay County, all use that riverway as, obviously some of them are county boundaries, but as a waterway to create that district boundary as well. So when you first look at this, perhaps it's twists and turns with the river, but again, when we are charged where feasible to use these existing geographical and political boundaries, they were able to do that in this instance for these house districts in Northeast Florida. This next item is just another example of waterways. I think can't be understated. Florida has a lot of waterways. We're going to talk through several of them because they do create very unique boundaries. However, they are very easily identifiable and oftentimes coincide with our existing county boundaries as well, which is an example we have up here of the Suwannee River here in North Florida. So the counties of Columbia, Hamilton, Suwannee, Lafayette, Levy, Gilchrist, and Dixie counties all share part of these boundaries, as well as a couple house districts. And DJ, if you go to the next slide, you can see here how obviously this is, you know, a prominent, well-known river throughout Florida, and it creates some very interesting geography whenever you look at how the river twists and turns. The next one, we'd like to take a second and talk about Lake Okeechobee. Obviously, this is a very prominent feature that we have here in the state of Florida and a very large water body relative to other lakes that are found across the state. What I'd like to point out and I find interesting about this is the Census Bureau and respectively the county boundaries have all worked to create ownership amongst the five counties surrounding Lake Okeechobee. And so you can see these blue lines here come to a point in the middle of Lake Okeechobee. And what that does is at a local level, give each individual county, you know, a perhaps ownership of the lake. Likewise, the Census Bureau has census blocks that go throughout the lake as well. But as we're drawing and as we're making considerations in this region of the state, understanding that Okeechobee, Martin, Palm Beach, Hendry, and Glades County are all affected by the decisions we make surrounding Lake Okeechobee. Now moving over to the other coast of the state, the other thing we wanted to be able to demonstrate for the committee are this concept of water blocks. Now, water blocks are a type of census block. They are defined by the U.S. Census Bureau. However, they go off the coast of Florida. As I mentioned in our last meeting, if you're on the east coast of Florida, the water blocks go out 3 miles. If you're on the west coast or the Gulf Coast of Florida, they go out 9 miles. And you can see here the blue lines indicated are your county boundaries, whereas the lighter gray lines are the water blocks or census blocks that are dictated by the U.S. Census Bureau. And so I think, you know, whenever we're considering things like compactness scores or perhaps where our lines are drawn, being able to understand where those census blocks split and how that could affect whether, again, it's compactness scores or actual boundary lines is really important given the amount of coastline that Florida has. The next item is Florida's Everglades. Obviously, this is a very large portion of our state in the southern region. What is fascinating about this, in my personal opinion, is that it is such a large area of our state with such little population. And so if you can see, you know, whether on your presentations or here on the screen, the lines that are drawn across the southern part of Florida are individual census blocks. Now, you can see in southeast Florida, you know, the Miami-Dade, Broward area, they're very densely packed, highly populated. However, as you go towards the middle of the state, they become much, much larger and have very little population in them. I think whenever we are going through our map drawing exercises, being able to understand that even if you're grabbing a large piece of geography, it may not affect the population counts that are being pulled into that district is a good point of reference for areas like the river, the Everglades. If you can see close enough, there's even some census blocks across the Everglades that have zero population in them. So the next bucket of items I'd like to talk about is bringing us back to our Tier 2 standard of compactness. We talked about these last times, however, in the context of looking at the currently enacted house map, we wanted to give some tangible examples that speak to the different types of scores that we have. So here we're looking at District 23. As you may remember, the REOC score measures, generally speaking, how circular in nature a district is. The convex hole measures similar concepts, but with a polygon shape. And the Paulsby-Popper test really helps look at some of the indentations and the jaggedness of districts. So this district, just when you visually inspect it, is fairly circular in nature. And you can see it scores a 0.62 on the REOC score. This one also happens to score fairly well on convex hole as well as Paulsby-Popper. And also, just as a reminder, these scores are done on a scale of 0 to 1. And all three of them are scored in that same fashion. Moving on to District 42, just as another point of reference for an example, this district has a more squared-off shape in nature, and so you can see here it scores very high on the convex hull score. However, it also scores fairly well on the REOC score in comparison to our other districts. The last slide I'd like to cover today is another Florida fun fact. As you know, it's stated several times throughout our constitutional standards, all of our districts must be contiguous. There is actually one area of Florida that is, by Census Bureau definition, non-contiguous, and we are actually one of only six states that has this non-contiguous territory. And as you can see here on the slides, we are talking about down in Monroe County in southern Florida, the Dry Tortugas. Is technically a non-contiguous piece of geography. However, obviously, it is part of our state and has to be accounted for as we draw our district boundaries. Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Lita. We are now going to hear from the public. Are there any public comments? No? No one's registered? Anybody else? Anybody wish to speak? No? Okay. Now, member comments. Any member comments or questions? Yes, Ranking Member, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief, but there are a couple comments and then a couple questions, if you don't mind. I'd like to reiterate my call, if it's possible, to change our time, our meeting time, so it doesn't conflict with the congressional meeting. I know, the presentation today is likely similar, if not the same, or at least in content, context, but moving forward, I think that's going to change, and to allow public the opportunity to participate in both of those meetings, would like to ask for a time change, if at all possible. Also wanted to mention, listen, I know things are moving a million miles an hour, and the committee's doing a lot of work, but it's my understanding that the committee packet actually dropped today at 10:45. That's only a couple hours before this meeting. If it's possible in the future to get it out sooner, not just for the benefit of the committee, but of the public, that would be greatly appreciated. Now into my questions, and I guess the first one, Mr. Chair, would be how we plan to deal with the prison population. And the reason that I ask is that in previous years in Florida and in other states, prisons with large populations are counted, and the individuals in those prisons are counted in the areas where they geographically reside. And what that can do is increase the voting strength of the voters in that district while diluting the strength of the districts where those prisoners will likely return to for that period of 10 years. So I know that 10 years ago we counted the prison system and the prisoners where they were geographically located, but it's my understanding that we aren't required to do it that way. As a matter of fact, we have the census data from the Census Bureau, and I sure hope we know the last known address of all of our Florida State prisoners. We could go ahead and pull them out of the count for that given district, and either keep them out of the count so we don't artificially increase the power of that district, or we could also insert them back into the system, into the count, based on where their previous address was located. There's already 12 states that do this, so my question, and I don't know if we have an answer today, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your time and talking with me before the meeting, but if the committee could look at what we're going to do in dealing with the prison population in terms of the count.
Sure, and thank you for the question. I'm going to let Lita address the issue of prison populations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ranking Member, for the question. The Census Bureau, as you stated, counts prison populations where they are incarcerated on Census Day. That data is then distributed down to all of the states, and as it's stated in statute, we use that data as it comes to us from the Census Bureau. We do not alter or manipulate it in any form or fashion. Thank you.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer. I do appreciate it. I guess my understanding is we are the legislature. We have the opportunity to change that in the statute. I don't know if the technical term is the implementing language that'll go along with the maps, but my understanding is while we can utilize the census data, the Census Bureau also has information relating to how many of those, you know, individual counts in that given area were the prison population. We can combine that with the DOC data and move them back to the district so we're not disenfranchising their district back home for that period of time. So I would just ask that we take a look at that.
Questions?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, that was awkward. I should have just continued.
Yeah,
I did have one additional question. I guess that comes to when we're discussing the actual drawing of the maps. I know that there was some conversation in the Senate the other day, and I don't know if they voted as a committee or what. But there was conversation in there about starting with the existing maps as they exist today as the starting point, or starting fresh and ignoring everything for the past 10 years. And I think my concern is if we're starting fresh, it's an opportunity to start in an unconstitutional direction. And the maps that we have today, both the congressional and the Senate maps were drawn by the court. They've been deemed constitutional, and obviously the House maps weren't challenged last time around, so those are constitutional. So what I would ask has there been any decision made in this committee or in the larger committee on how we're going to start when it comes to the actual drawing of the maps?
No, thank you for the question, and it's important for the committee to know and for the public. Map drawing has not begun. We have not drawn any maps. We're in the educational process now. It's also important to remember that Florida is much different in 2021 than it was when the last census was done in 2010. We've grown by 2.5 million people. And so while some of the districts based upon the Tier 1 and Tier 2 standards may look similar as we begin drawing maps, they could look radically different based upon where that population in the state has grown and where it has shrunk. So, it's kind of a combination question where some of it may look the same, which would be we have the standards from the last map versus a starting fresh based upon that population. But map drawing has not begun.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Valdez, question.
Thank you very much, Chair Byrd. It's not so much of a question, but more so of a reflection back from this morning's education committee, where we talked about dropout prevention as well as the DJJ and different programs that we have out there for our youth at risk. And one of the things that resonated with me as we were discussing, listening to staff go through the presentation, as well as following up on Ranking Member Daly's question on the prison population, we do something very similar in the educational system where the students that either drop out from high school and or fall into the DJJ program, that those children are charged back to their district, if you will. So if we can do it in the educational system, I'm sure that there's a way that we can do that with the prison population as well. So then we can, at least put them back to where they may be going home to afterwards.
Thank you for the comment. Anyone else? Anyone else? All right. Members, I hope you found today's exercise to be another step in understanding our constitutional standards. Oh, what's that? Did you have a question? Oh, okay. Rep. Woodson has a question. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Byrd. Actually, it's more of a comment, but kind of a question as well. To piggyback on both of my colleagues, what they said, if the prison population is not counted in the geographic area where they reside, that can impact major fundings as well. When we look at fundings that come down to the community for the various services that are being provided. I think that's something that we might need to keep in mind because this population would come back to the community that they come from. So this is just some food for thought that we need to keep in mind and in the sense that we should look at how we counting them in the area that they reside. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Woodson. Anyone else? Going once, going twice. All right. So I hope you found today's exercise to be another step in understanding our constitutional standards, as well as a little more about our great state. In our future meetings, I look forward to delving into Tier 1 of our constitutional standards. And I would encourage all of you to take a look at the map and the presentation, and you will start to see in the current districts how these tiers are applied and how these standards are applied. I mean, I've started to look at the map in a different way as I see geographic boundaries, railroads, rivers, and other factors. So it'll start to make sense if you spend some time looking at the current map. This concludes our agenda for today. And Representative Brannon moves we rise. Unless there's an objection upon the motion of Representative Brannon, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.